Sentire Media.
Hello, you. You're listening to A History of Italy. Episode 165. The Borgias are the bosses.
E non posso più accucciarmi, e così ritorno su. Lascio i colli nelle valli, tra due salici piangenti. Io ritrovo la speranza di un amore che ormai fu.
In this episode, we're going to stick with the Borgias for a little more, as Rodrigo Borgia has just become Pope Alexander VI, and we want to see how he gets on. One of his objectives will be to set up a lasting dynasty for one of his sons by carving out a duchy in central Italy. Now, I know that you, my dear listener, have often dreamt of carving out your own duchy in central Italy, but however many times you have read Machiavelli's The Prince, you're just not sure where to start. That is because you are lacking the local knowledge to help navigate the terrain and politics of the peninsula. You'll want to familiarize with the land, the people, local customs, and of course food. Well, you're in luck, because the partner for this episode is Explore Worldwide. It's all about local knowledge, and that is what sets Explore apart. Their respect for the local culture and environment extends to finding local tour leaders that can get you off the beaten track and into the heart of your adventure. And their small groups allow for a more personalized experience that you will never forget, and you won't raise suspicion among the locals about your intentions to create a lasting dynasty. Whether it's visiting a Roman villa on the classical tour in Sicily or a food and wine tour in the hilltop towns of Tuscany, Explore take care of everything, putting the quality of their local tour leaders front and center, so you'll truly understand the wow factor of where you are. For example, even if you don't happen to have a close family member in the high-ranking Catholic clergy, you may want to start with Explore Worldwide's Rome to Venice by rail tour to get a good layout of your future realm. Then, why not take an Emilia-Romagna walking tour to taste the Parmigiano-Reggiano cheese of Reggio Emilia, the balsamic vinegar of Modena, and take in the sights of Bologna's two towers. Even if you don't decide to try and set up a lasting dynasty for your family, don't just travel, explore. Go to exploreworldwide.com for more information. That's exploreworldwide.com for more information. Papal election of close family members is not included in the service. In the last episode, we followed the life of Cardinal Rodrigo Borgia as he climbed his way to the top spot in the Catholic Church. The famous story goes that he ended up in the last stretch by corrupting Ascanio Sforza, one of the two big rivals for Pope, with so much silver that it required four pack mules to carry it. Even if that hadn't been the case, there was, as always, some major quid pro quo going on behind the scenes. Cardinal Rodrigo Borgia had become Pope Alexander VI, and he did not waste time getting down to business. He quickly donned the largest of the three papal robes which were on hand, not knowing which size pope would be chosen beforehand, and he set to work. The job of pope was a complicated one. After all, he was not just the spiritual leader of the church, but the temporal leader of the papal states. He had to balance things on a local, national, and international level. He would have to be careful of the balance of power within Rome, for example, between the powerful Colonna and Orsini families. There was a lot of politicking and maneuvering going on there, especially over the possession of a town called Anguillara, but it gets a little too complicated to merit too much of our time. Within his own papal states, Pope Borgia would have to contend with the push of local lords for independence, and on a so-called national level, he would have to guarantee the actual survival of the papal states among the big players of the age, the Duchy of Milan, the Republic of Venice, the Republic of Florence, and the Kingdom of Naples. On an international level, the issue was to avoid stronger powers outside of Italy, such as France, Spain, and the Holy Roman Emperor, coming down and bossing everyone around, upsetting the delicate balance of power. The first order of business was to get Rome under control after the usual lawlessness that followed the death of a pope. Alexander did this by having any assassins, for example, hung over the ruins of their destroyed houses. He was not a gratuitously cruel man, however. He was actually patient and forgiving, for example, refusing to censor many of the pamphlets that were written against him. His staff loved him and even saved his life once in the summer of 1500 when the roof over the room he was in was hit by lightning and the ceiling fell on him. A lot of what we know about the Borgias comes from the diary of his master of ceremonies, Johannes Burckhardt, who gives us an image of the Borgias as human beings rather than monsters. They were a loving and tight-knit family who often closed themselves up from the rest of the world and would speak to each other in Spanish, both things greatly contributing to the rumours spread by their detractors. When his father became pope, Cesare Borgia was not yet 18 and studying in Pisa to enter into a religious career. His father now gave that career quite a considerable acceleration by nominating him a cardinal. How many 18-year-old cardinals do you know? It seemed that Alexander had two very clear roles for his son. Cesare would become an important member of the church and build up the family fortune, while Alexander's favourite, Giovanni, would be the founder of a great Borgia dynasty. The only problem with this plan was that Cesare didn't like it at all, but he kept quiet. This was one of the characteristics of Cesare Borgia that helped create the family legend. It was always impossible, almost to the very end, to understand what he was thinking. He was a master at hiding his feelings. There were other two children, as we know, that the Pope had had from his favourite lover, Vannozza Cattani. The youngest was Goffredo or Geoffrey or Geoffrey. He was 11 at the time of his father's election to Pope, which didn't stop Alexander using him in his political strategy by marrying him off to the illegitimate daughter of the heir to the throne of Naples, Alfonso, a 16-year-old girl by the name of Sancha. She was quite a character and knew how to enjoy herself. Rumour would have it that she enjoyed herself with her husband's older brothers quite a bit. Then there was Lucrezia, she who would spend a couple of centuries with the reputation of a depraved sexual predator who wore a poisoned ring and was an active partner in the Machiavellian scheming of her father and brothers. Then, starting in the 20th century, she turned into the innocent victim of said scheming, which was sort of true when she was young, but she would go on to become the Duchess of Ferrara, loved by her people, a competent administrator, and a keen businesswoman. For now, she was used to shore up the family ties with the Duchy of Milan, ruled by the Sforza, as you will remember. This was in part strategic planning and in part a thank you for Cardinal Ascanio Sforza and his support for the election of Pope Borgia. Lucrezia is cool, to the point that she has her own episode which you can go back and listen to, so we won't go far into her story again, but we'll take a general look. The Sforza chosen for the marriage match was the Count of Pesaro, Giovanni Sforza. Citing the bride's young age, the marriage was not immediately consummated with witnesses, as was the norm. To make a long story short, and to look into the future a little bit, the couple did not live happily ever after. Within 4 years, the Borgias' alliance with Milan was not looking so convenient. Lucrezia's husband had to be gotten rid of. Murder was a possibility, floated by the Pope and his ambitious sons, but in the end, they opted for a marriage annulment with Giovanni Sforza, valuing his life more than his reputation, accepted to publicly and officially declare that he was impotent and could not consummate the marriage. This despite the fact that he had had and would have children. It seems that it was he, in revenge, that started to spread the rumours of incest between Lucrezia and her brothers and even her father. This annulment occurred in 1497. We need to now head back to 1494, when, as we know, French King Charles VIII made his way down into Italy. When he finally made his way down to Rome, we saw that things looked a bit dire for the Borgias, but we also saw that in the end, the Pope managed to reach an agreement, and the king wasn't too keen on making an enemy of the Pope anyway, so he went on his way. While in Rome, the French were a bit naughty, as occupying armies often are, but one particular group crossed the wrong people. They broke into a tavern, smashing up the place, taking what they wanted, and roughing up the woman who owned and ran the place. The woman was Vannozza Cattane, mother of the Borgia children. As soon as he found out, Cesare Borgia went out looking for the soldiers, found them, and slaughtered every one. When the French army left Rome, Cesare was sent along as a hostage, and he then faded into the night and made his way back to Rome, leaving his baggage train full of what the French thought was treasure, but was actually full of worthless objects to make weight, except for the one wagon he had actually opened up to show them. What we didn't mention when we spoke of Charles's passes through Rome was that the Borgias sent along another rather illustrious hostage the French king had insisted on. This was Shedzaze Cem, or just Cem for short, the brother of the Turkish Sultan Bayezid II. Cem had been in the custody of the Pope since 1489, after having escaped from his homeland following his attempt at taking the throne from his older brother. Giovanni, the second son of Pope Borgia, had started quite the bromance with this important hostage and had even taken to dressing like him in Oriental garb, something which added to the scandal around the Borgias. Why was Charles so keen to have Cem? Well, he didn't just want the kingdom of Naples for itself. In his dreams of glory, he saw himself leading a great crusade to free the Holy Land. Having a man who had rebelled against the Sultan and could be a possible rallying point for further rebellion could be very handy. Unfortunately for Charles and his well-laid plans, Cem happened to die in his custody. Now, it was not a rare event for a seemingly healthy young man to just pop his clogs like that. But there was a strong suspicion that he had been poisoned by his travel companion, Cesare Borgia, who had been paid off by the victim's brother, the Sultan. Another possible murder on the Borgias' tab. With the French threat behind them, it was time for the Borgias to seek revenge against the Roman noble families who had sided with Charles against the Pope. The first were actually ex-allies of theirs, the Orsini. Giovanni Borgia was sent in 1496 to besiege their fortress, but the expedition met with disaster. The Borgias once again found themselves on the brink of extinction, harried by the Orsini and the remaining pockets of French troops. Alexander had to ask the Spanish for help, who sent up from Naples the commander Gonzalo de Cordoba, who succeeded in saving the family. You might want to put a pin in the name of de Cordoba, and we'll also get to what the Spanish were doing there in the first place. For his help, Gonzalo got a pat on the back and a thank you. Giovanni Borgia, who had failed spectacularly in his first and only military engagement, was made Duke of Benevento. De Cordoba was not happy. Even less happy was Cesare Borgia, who was sent to negotiate for the duchy for his hated brother. It was a bit too much. If there was one thing the brothers had in common, besides spending special time with their younger brother's wife, Sancha, was that they hated each other. Cesare's big problem, however, would soon be solved. Giovanni Borgia was last seen alive on the night of the 14th of June, 1497. 2 days later, his body was found washed up along the banks of the Tiber River, full of savage stab wounds. The murder of Giovanni Borgia is one of the great mysteries surrounding the family. You might want to look back at my crossover episode with the Assassinations podcast by Neil Cooper to hear more about the murder. For the moment, we'll leave a deeply grieving Borgia family with Pope Alexander even thinking of repenting his ways and reforming the church, and Lucrezia devastated at the loss of her brother. Cesare, on the other hand, was finally free to take the place of his brother as the creator of a dynasty. The problem was that to create a power base of wealth and land from almost nothing in a crowded place like Italy, you had to make a lot of people unhappy. There was no middle ground. It would either be power and glory or disaster. Like the inscription on his sword said, for Cesare Borgia, it would be Caesar or nothing. Thank you very much for listening. Grazie mille. Thanks in particular to my wonderful Patreon supporters, starting with the first part of the Margherita Hack and Galileo Galilei level, and they are Alison H, Amanda D, Annie, Anthony G, Karsten, Catherine, Silane, Cindy M, DB, Dean V, Demetrio, Dennis, Dominique T, Emily B, Eric W, Alam, Federica R, Gabriel S, Greg, Gunnar, and Ignazio. And of course, we cannot forget the tippy top Maria Montessori and Dante Alighieri level, Lisa K, Andrew M, Peter W, David L, Rinat, David C, JW, Sen, David A, Karen D, Peter F, Helenka, Kaiser Bosch, Brigid, Dallas, and Joseph V. Of those, welcome aboard to our new entries, Joseph V, Alam, Space Punch, Brendan N, Dallas R, Joshua G, Daniel P, and Kyle D. Thank you, one and all. If, like the Patreon supporters, you'd like to have access to ad-free episodes and extra content, go to ahistoryofitaly.com to the support page and then click through to Patreon. Also, if you are so inclined, you're more than welcome to get in touch, ask questions, make considerations, or just say hello. And that is hello@ahistoryofitaly.com or any of the social media buttons you'll find on the contact page of the website. Once again, thank you very much for listening, and until next time, arrivederci.
Sentire Media.
Hey, podcast producers and show hosts. Do you want to join a podcast network that celebrates all things Italian? At Sentire Media, we understand the allure of Italy and its unique culture. Our devoted team of hosts and producers are all driven by their shared passion for Italy. And we work tirelessly to create the best lifestyle podcasts and content that will whisk you away to the very heart of Italy. With us, you can savor the mouth-watering flavors, get lost in the stories from the past, break down the cultural barriers, and truly immerse yourself in the vibrant traditions of this intoxicating country. If you have a great podcast idea or are already in production and would like to join Sentire Media, head over to sentiremedia.com, that's S-E-N-T-I-R-E media.com, and find out how to submit your show.